had to be about 15 years ago, maybe 20. My dear friend Chris Hassett, who's a supreme vocalist and was having a concert in our congregation in San Diego, a Friends and Lovers concert. And Chris's partner, Dan, was very ill in the hospital across the street from our church. And about midway through the concert, someone rushed in and pulled me aside. I was in the front row and said, "Dan is dying. And Chris needs to be with him right now." And Chris left to be with his mate. And we sang "Abide With Me." And as for "Let It Be," that was the last one the Beatles put together, last number one in 1970. Paul's mother was Mother Mary. So was my mother, Mother Mary, and so was my mother-in-law, Mother Mary. And Paul's mother died when he was about 14. He said, "When I grow up, may I be a smidgen of the human being that my mother Mary was." Let it be. I want to dedicate today's sermon to my cousin Mary Catherine Lind, who's dying of brain cancer. She's 76, a few months older than I am. And she learned in January that she had a brain tumor, and if she had the operation, she would live 6 months. Well, she had the operation, and she's lived 8 months, holding her own, lost considerable weight, not in much pain or discomfort. Her husband, from whom she has been estranged for a dozen years, came back to live with her and take her on home. And Mary Catherine sent out a card with her portrait of herself, photograph of Mary Catherine on the front, her front porch, and inside a well-crafted, simple little message to all of her friends and family saying thank you. I have that on my desk at home. I'm also in my 76th year. Had my birthday last Friday the 13th. Some of you are rounding the bend as well, I can see. But we don't know, do we? We don't know how many years we're graced. You may have read the relatively recent piece by the American oncologist and bioethicist Ezekiel Emanuel on why he hopes to die at 75, contending that living too long often proves to be an immeasurable loss, which is true. It's a partial truth. He makes a provocative and edgy case, but on the whole, I don't agree with him. There's nothing magical about closing out at 75. As long as you can stay consciously, positively, strategically aging, as I'm blessed and lucky to be able to do. Second reason that for today's theme, I owe God a death: my two best male friends died during the past year. One eagerly wanting to halt a pain-saturated existence. Nathan was so filled with pain, emotional and physical pain, he said, "Let me go, let me out." And after every visit to him, and I'm kind of an upbeat guy, I couldn't bring him out. I couldn't lift his soul. Singing, magic, hugs, memories, cleaning his laundry, nothing worked. After which time and visit, I would go to one of my nursing homes and sing to lift my spirit. And my other brother, passed away prematurely of an unexpected illness. I mean, we had covenanted for both of these soul brothers to speak at my memorial service. I was older than both of them. But lamentably, I ended up speaking at theirs. I'm reminded of Thornton Wilder's poignant line, "There's a land of the living and a land of the dead, and the bridge is love. The only truth, the only survival, only love transcends death. Only love outlasts death. Only in love do we have the dead still in our hearts." I look around the room and I'm very touched and inspired by your photo album of elders and crones. Frankly, I know it may be up for a while, then you bring in another show, huh? But these photos ought to be someplace on the premises or some way brought up and with the new additional members each year. They have earned the Doctor of Durability degree. They are the sages upon whose shoulders we stand and move and live out our lives. Betty and Bob Wilder, I knew them. That's how far back Carolyn and I go. Bob and Betty Wilder. Picture two children talking to one another around a tree. And the younger one says, "It's a beautiful tree, isn't it?" Yeah, it sure is, the older one says. "But you know what? It's a shame that we won't be around to see it when it's fully grown." And the younger one moans, "But why? Where are we going?" You see, young children don't really envision death or a finish line, certainly not their own. They understand sleep and separation, but not death, not the cessation of physical life. But to be sure, we adults, particularly in this death-denying culture of America, we have our issues as well. Note the recent ARP magazine lead article, good magazine, front page, 20 ways to live longer. I mean, how about three ways to live stronger, thicker, more beautiful lives? Will we face death in 10 weeks or 10 years or several decades? And what exactly will be the form of our greeting? And which particular indignities or delights might be in store for you or me? Well, whether death comes sooner or later, as a relief or as an outrage, we need to be prepared. Socrates said we need to practice dying. That means we got to say goodbye to something or someone or some lost dream every day to be fully awake and alive. We're not grieving, we're not awake. We're not aware of what we're losing. We're not alive and vital. A lot of studies have been taken of people who have been clinically dead and then they've come back to life. And it's good news, essentially, spiritually upbeat news, positive news, that they've never been afraid to die again. But none of us knows, do we? When the ultimate thud occurs, when we truly die and don't return, we don't know what happens. And so I'm a benevolent and open-hearted agnostic about the issue of death. I don't anticipate one, a life after death or a life after life. I don't anticipate one. I'm not hankering for one. I don't need one. I'm going for broke now, all out now. I don't need to wait around for some extension. But there might just be one. I'm a universalist in training. I'm one of those universalists that believe in everlasting love, that we came in on the apron strings of love and we've been supported by love, and when we die, there's going to be love waiting for us. I don't need to talk about it. I can sing about it more than I can talk about it. I don't need to discuss it or debate it. There is a love holding me. There is a love holding you. There is a love holding all. We rest in that love. That's my theology. And I'm taking it on home. And I'm trying to live it, trying to embody it. But the World Health Organization reminds us, hey, the world death rate is holding steady at 100%. So we need to make adequate peace with our own deaths. That's one of our weaknesses, I think, as Unitarian Universalists. When I was on the Commission on Appraisal and we were reviewing our purposes and principles, which can always stand in need of thickening and deepening, can they not? There's no mention of death in our purposes or sources. We wave gently at God on the passing, and that's not deep enough. We don't mention forgiveness, the ultimate form of love. But it bothers me that we have not consented to die as Unitarian Universalists. We've not admitted that death is a reality that needs to be embraced and faced and endured and companioned. And visited with that love when it's all over. Death cannot be tamed. Death is unknown. It's mysterious. Let's just say death is death. And a central key to living fully is acknowledgement of that fact. Death is not only inevitable, it's natural. Without death, there would not be that ability to love and to share and create meanings if we knew that we were going on forever and ever. And it's even desirable in many cases, a relief. There's so many situations as a minister of 50 years where I've had to say goodbye to a stillborn or a 10-year-old or a 22-year-old or a tragic death. And that's too early, and I never was really able to befriend that, okay? But there are many deaths that are desirable. A chance to let go and let be, let go, let be. Surrender. Years back, I was a discussant on a TV show that was on a dialogue on immortalism, cryogenics. And the proponent of this approach was relatively unfazed by my remarks until I announced that even if I could live forever in my current condition, I'd turn it down. I'd turn down the offer. And he said, everyone hankers for everlastingness. Especially you ministers. I can't believe it. I'm flabbergasted. He kept trying to persuade me and to want to live forever. Exact words where no one in their right mind really wants to die. And I said, I do someday. Not yet, but I do someday. And I've got only one death. And I'm going to try to make it a good one. Did you ever hear an evangelist describe heaven in terms of the challenges waiting to be faced? Or in terms of passion or toil or justice? No, just eternal bliss. How boring. How boring. and Elysian fields, a sort of Palm Springs with a year-round irrigation system. Terrible constancy, no further growth or change taking place, destitute of variation or wrestling, how boring, how eternally boring. My dad died at 81 and a half. That's what men generally get. Some more, some less. Who is to predict that I'm going to get more? So I'm even more aware as my cousin is dying and my two best friends died. Mortality is central for me, not in a morbid way, in a liberating way. Follow me around this afternoon. Be with me tomorrow. I'm an awake, lively, vital guy. I'm not morose about this, okay? It's not a somber, more morose topic. It's an enlivening one. As the psalmist said, teach us to number our days. Not just pile them up, number them that we might apply our hearts unto wisdom and compassion. That means living with greater faithfulness and grit and grace. Every day matters to me. Every person I connect with matters to me. Every engagement I have matters to me. Because someday it'll be my last one. And I want to be ready as I can be. How many of us would clean up the environment? How many of us would grow a beloved community? How many of us would raise healthy and mature children? Or volunteer at the homeless center? Or struggle for racial justice? How many of us would do all of that or any of that if we believed we had an eternity in which to do it? I don't see many hands going up. A good death means that I will resemble, as I die, the way in which I tried to live. That my closing chapters will not contradict the core of my parenting, my partnership, my patriotism, my citizenship in the universe. It won't be a living contradiction. That I will be congruent. You'll say, yeah, that's the way he tried to be. Failed, but he tried to be that way. A good death permits us to be pretty much the same person dying as we were when we're alive. A good death doesn't mean that I'll die peacefully. Although, yeah, I'd like that. And I don't want to die via prolonged misery. A good death is more than going to sleep one night and not waking up, although I'll take that too. A good death is when I go into the ground essentially clean. Current, up to date, clean of regrets and resentments. Having said and been and done everything that's on my moral bucket list. Now I recognize that my name won't last forever. It may be sooner forgotten than I desire or imagine. And my labors and visions will get lost in the shuffle. And my books are going to be taken to the dump by my kids. You know, that's why I'm cleaning out now. You know, it's enough. There's grieving when there's a loss. And then you got to take care of their stuff? Not fair, not right, not appropriate. Clean up now. Shed now. Say goodbye now. Carolyn and I have a room of memories in our house. And in that room, she has her odyssey and her memorabilia, which are very substantial, from her family and her own life. All the stories I could tell. And if she goes first, I get to tell them. And I got my stuff and my things that meant something to me, including the quilt that our daughter-in-law, Misha, put together for my Friday the 13th birthday last Friday. of T-shirts that show what I've tried to stand for in terms of social justice, and T-shirts of artistic journeys and congregations I've served and Little League teams that I've been a part of for the grandchildren, and on and on. And they're on this quilt, and that quilt, I said, Misha, it's going to hang in our house. I was in tears. It was so moving. It was such a gift. Before I go, and I said, but when I do go, if you're up to it and I go first, I want that in the memory room next to the food and the band playing, okay? We will die. We've got to consent to die. We owe God a death. Not five or six, okay? One will do. But there's comforting news for me. Love outlasts death. Love in the form of individual memories for a period of time. Love in the form of causes that I aspire to resemble that are sustained with or without my name matters not. Memories that endure in the vitality of Unitarian Universalist congregations that have touched me for 50 years. That goes on. At our church in San Diego, where we were blessed to serve for 24 years, a few of you have been there. There's a memorial garden and a memorial wall and a fountain. And on the wall, we have the names of people that have chosen to have their names on our memorial wall. But it says, Josefino Alvarez, 1928-1987. Nothing more, nothing less. Not a long little, you know, this person got five lines and this person has three words and therefore they're more valuable. None of that. An equalizer on those plaques on the memorial wall. There are children on that wall. There are stillborns on that wall. There are 90-plus-year-olds on that wall, and so many of them in art. 24 years we were blessed to be part of their lives. And our names are on that wall. They'll go on that wall. My parents are on that wall. My parents-in-law are on that wall. And we're contiguous. We're touching. We're connected. And when a person was interested in maybe becoming a part of our community, we would have a sit-down and in our office, and we'd take as long as it took, and we'd say, these are some of the things that we have going on that we can bring to your soul and your life and your heart and your family, And what can you bring us? What are the gifts that you have to deliver us that are special? We need you, and we need your irrepeatable singular treasures. And they'd share those, and we'd have a back and forth, and then we'd say, we want to show you our property, and we'd go to where we scattered cremains in our canyon, and we'd show the memorial wall, and I'd say, here are your brothers and sisters in faith. And on the wall, in a tree, there's a beautiful tree of life. And there's a quote from Isaiah nestled in the midst of that tree. For you shall go out in joy and be led forth in peace. And the mountains and the hills before you shall break forth into singing. And all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. May it be so. May it be so.